Hey everyone, Alan here, creator and host of Script to Screen. I've always been a fan of podcasts, and when I was still in college, I always wanted to host one, but it wasn't that simple back then. Nowadays, the options are endless, but there's only one that can help you and your podcast reach listeners and grow with your vision. Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it is 100% free and ridiculously easy to use. And now Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise on your podcast. That means you can get paid to podcast right away. In fact, that's exactly what I'm doing right now by reading this ad. Anchor has been Script to Screen's home since I first started the podcast, and I couldn't be happier. Not only is it simple for uploading episodes, but fans can also reach out to us by sending voice messages and be featured on the show. So if you've always wanted to start a podcast and make money doing it, go to anchor.fm/start. Again, that's anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of podcasters already using Anchor. That's anchor.fm/start. Send me a link when you're done. I can't wait to hear your podcast.
And now, a brand new episode of Script to Screen Spotlight here on Radio Lebanon 96.2 FM, made to be heard.
Welcome to a brand new episode of Script to Screen Spotlight here on Radio Lebanon and 96.2 FM. Yes, it is Friday. It is a Friday, TGIF. And this is our second official episode of Script to Screen Spotlight. We've got a brand spec. I mean, it's great. The stuff we're going to be talking about on this show. Again, just a quick reminder, Spotlight is the branch of our show or segment of our show or spin-off of our show, you know, whatever you want to label it, where my co-host and I focus on a particular topic or a filmmaker, a producer, a screenwriter, yada, yada, yada. But there, you know, the spotlight is literally us putting a spotlight on specific things, whether it be, again, like I said, a filmmaker, their work, a specific topic that we feel very strongly about. And on top of that, we have a third segment on the show, where it's either going to be an unforgettable scene that both my co-host and I want to talk about, whether it be related to the topic or the filmmaker or the actor, etc., or it's going to be a segment we like to call Second Chance, which is where each of us essentially try to convince the other as to why we should give a particular movie a second chance. Now, I've been saying we for a long time now, so join me in welcoming the person that I cannot do this without, the co-host, the co-captain, the one, the only Hod. Solo to my Chewbacca. Almost forgot that. The one, the only Hod Solo.
Hey, Alan. Hello, screeners. Thank God it's Friday.
I know.
And what a way to kick off the weekend.
Exacto mundo.
Yeah, talking about movies.
Talking about movies.
And series. We never say that enough. We always over-focus on movies.
Yeah, we
but
do.
Movies and series.
And series. I mean, it's exciting. It's exciting. You know, the new seasons of shows should be starting soon.
Exactly.
It's exciting.
Anything you're excited about?
Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Of course, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I was pumped to hear about The Expanse getting saved by Amazon.
True.
So I'm super excited about that. I'm almost done binge watching the seasons I missed.
Yeah.
Because it's a season and a half that I missed. So like half a season two and then three. Because I heard that it was getting canceled. I was like, oh, forget it. And then it was like, Amazon saves the day. And I'm like, ah, okay. Basically. So I got super excited about that. And so, I'm looking forward to it. It's exciting. New season, you know, like a season premiere season is my favorite. It's like everything's coming back. Routines are back in play. It's like, yeah, you know, the fall season. It's like summer is done, you know. So, yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, yeah. Summer's done. Summer's over. Back to school. Back to uni.
Yeah.
Well, not everyone's back to uni.
Not everyone.
Some, I think AUB, LAU are probably back in uni.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Others will follow in a while.
And then the fall season also ushers in those, the fall blockbusters.
Yeah.
So that's always fun.
I hope they're quite better than the summer blockbusters.
Yes, summer was dull.
Honestly.
We've discussed that enough.
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't impressed. The 2018 summer is not going to be very memorable, but just with a very few movies. Mm-hmm. But
Fallout
and Infinity War.
Does that count as summer though?
I think so.
It was May.
It was released in May. Is that the kickoff of in the
yeah,
US?
Yeah, that is summer. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so okay, Infinity War and Fallout, the most memorable, I think.
Yeah.
Aside from those indie movies that
yes.
came out that have
yeah.
that are super, super good. Episode 2 of Spotlight.
Yep.
Feels great. Feels amazing.
Feels awesome.
Let's just dive right in. We're gonna serenade you guys with a track that is essentially going to lead us into the first of our spotlights, the first spotlight of our show, which is entitled Almost Famous. And coinkidinky, the song comes from Almost Famous.
Good movie. Very good movie.
Yeah, it is a great movie. Yeah. Kate Hudson in her prime.
Yes. I think it was also Cameron Crowe at his peak.
Yeah.
Directing.
Very true. Very true.
Because after that, he kind of
just went downhill.
Yeah.
It's sad absolutely. When that happens.
Yeah, but,
it's almost like one-hit wonders.
Yes, it's kind of a good setup to what's to come.
Brilliant. So in today's first spotlight, we decided, like I said, it is entitled Almost Famous. So we decided we're going to pick an actor or a director and kind of discuss that, you know, how they fit into that almost famous kind of category. You know, they almost made it big time.
Yeah. Or they might have been big at one point and then suddenly just also went downhill.
Yeah, exactly. So they were almost famous.
Yes.
Had, why don't you go ahead and tell us who you chose?
I don't think so. I don't know if people are going to get that reference. It's actually, we're going to be talking about.
Yeah, it's almost like, I don't think so.
Yeah, yeah. Or the, with the hands. we're going to be talking about...
I made my family disappear.
I think that was every kid's dream at some point.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, and we're talking about No one else than... We're talking about Mr. Macaulay Culkin.
Macaulay, shout out to the Macaulay Culkin.
Of course, the star of Home Alone 1 and 2.
Yep. Uncle Buck.
He started in Uncle Buck.
He started Uncle Buck and then he did Home Alone and Home Alone 2.
Yeah, he had My Girl.
My Girl.
He had...
Ugh.
Yeah, oh my, that was...
Breaketh My Hearteth.
That was a hard movie to watch.
It was.
Because it was a happy movie and then suddenly...
Kevin dies.
Yeah. the kid dies.
You know.
And who can forget Richie Rich?
Richie Rich, for sure. And then he just, it went...
Kaput.
Terrible after that
for
Macaulay Culkin.
Sayonara.
Yeah, this is sort of what happens when, kids get famous.
Yeah, a lot of kids in Hollywood that have that fame at a young age don't seem to cope with it throughout the rest of their lives and at some
it's
point
sad.
Disappear. Is it parents mismanaging
Well, we know for
them?
A fact that Macaulay Culkin had a horrible father.
Yeah, true.
Who tried to completely micromanage his life.
Exactly, take advantage of the popularity of his son. But Macaulay Culkin, I guess in the 90s, was the child star.
I mean, yeah, big time.
Like, absolutely. He was in Michael Jackson videos, a lot of product placement.
Mm-hmm.
And he
two fantastic films.
Yeah,
that you still watch every Christmas.
Yeah, yeah. I not a Christmas passes without me watching.
Oh, yeah.
Home Alone. At least Home Alone 1. I do like Home Alone 2, but for me, the first one is.
Yeah, I mean, I am a slightly bigger fan than of Home Alone 2. And I think it's the ending of Home Alone 2 that kills me.
The tree. The bird lady?
Not just the bird lady, but just like his mom finding him in front of the trees and him running down. You got the swell of music. Yeah, it's just, it's like the first ending, but a little more epic, you know?
Yeah, the first ending was very soft and at home. And Kevin, she's looking
sorry,
for him.
Mom. You know,
and
like
then he comes and... Yeah.
Yeah.
And Kevin grew up to become Jigsaw. No, but that's something else. There's a fan theory online by this.
Whoa, that would make so much sense.
Yeah, they say that.
Oh, Lord.
Because Kevin was traumatized as a kid.
Yes.
And he grows up and catches people who've done bad things because in Saw, the people who are tortured.
Oh, my goodness. That's so twisted.
He likes setting traps and so on. He's
that's insane.
He talks about it on The Tonight Show or one of those late night shows. It's quite funny.
Well, he has a podcast now.
Yeah, oh, he does.
Yeah, I mean, he's it's him and a friend of his. It's called Bunny Ears, something along those lines. But it's on Apple Podcasts. I know that for a fact. And I know he did like one or two indie films recently, not just before, but like he did them. He did a few films recently as well.
He had a film, I think, in 2004 with Mandy Moore and I forgot who, but it was called Saved and he was in a wheelchair.
Yeah. No, I'm saying post this.
Before that. So he disappeared for a while and then he did that and then he re-disappeared and then had a few indie films.
Yeah.
But I mean,
he hasn't been... It hasn't been anything, you know, where we would have liked to see him. Because I feel like, I know for a while there was a lot of drug use and there was a lot of, you know, like just not great issues that he went into. And it was just a lot.
It was a lot. And I think he, growing up, got offered less roles or different roles.
Yeah.
Because as a kid, he was the cute kid, the wise ass, you know, that kind of sneaky little guy. And he grew up and people became less interested too. And then things went
it's
downhill.
It's really sad when that happens. But then again, this is Hollywood.
Yeah, this is what happened.
Hollywood. So for my pick, are you done with yours?
Pretty much. I mean, I don't think there's much more to say about Macaulay Culkin.
We wish him the best, that's for sure. I mean, like, I hope to see him kind of try to kind of get back into the game a little bit.
Maybe TV, maybe like a kind of
that wouldn't
Netflix
be
kind of show. That would work.
Yeah.
I think he has a rock band, too, by the way.
He did. He did have a band. He's
at
not.
One point.
Yeah, he's not in it. Yeah. Get back when he was dating Mila Kunis.
Yeah. Mrs. Ashton Kutcher.
Is she the current Mrs. Ashton?
Isn't she?
No. I don't.
Yes, she is.
Whoa, that 70s show.
Wow. We went through time in the 70s and 90s.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we did.
Wow.
So back to 2005.
Yeah.
My pick for Almost Famous is director James McTeague.
Yes.
Who actually is the director of V for Vendetta.
Yep. Fantastic.
Which is, I think, and it's the only film that really kind of hit big time for him because he's done. I mean, after V for Vendetta, he did Ninja Assassin.
Yes.
Which, I mean, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't a great film. And then he did The Raven. Then he did Survivor. Most recently this year, he did Breaking In.
Yep.
He also directed The Invasion with Nicole Kidman and Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it wasn't as.
None of the movies you
named. Effective as V for Vendetta. I mean, the only one that you can kind of, you know, you say V for Vendetta and immediately you go, remember the 5th of November. So you mention all the other movies and you're like, I remember like maybe scenes or shots, but nothing that's so impactful.
Yes.
Whereas V for Vendetta was just, it's a gem of a film. I mean, it's a fantastic movie. I think it's one of Natalie Portman's greatest performances in this film. The score is so great. But again, you had people like the Wachowskis kind of backing him up.
Yeah.
Because it is kind of, it's with them. They were producers, I think.
Or, yeah, yeah. I thought they were directors at one point, but then,
They didn't direct it, but yeah. It feels very Wachowski.
Yeah.
But he is kind of a one-hit wonder. Like, he did this film, he did V for Vendetta, and then everything after that just got, you know, more and more B-film. And The Invasion had, I mean, he had two great leads, but the film wasn't as great as, you know, or as impactful, like I said, as V for Vendetta or, Ninja Assassin. He was, I think, stylistically, he tried to implement V for Vendetta a little bit because of the way the slow motion and the fighting and all that stuff. The edit of Ninja Assassin is really good. I mean, I like it because I'm secretly, I like ninjas a lot. So I don't, you know, I'm a huge fan of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles growing up. So I'm a big fan of ninjas.
Cowabunga, dude.
So I'm a big fan of ninjas and fight choreography and all that stuff. So on that end, I think Ninja Assassin was good when it came to the fight sequences and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But as a film as a whole, it's just not that great. And again, like I said earlier, none of them as impactful as V for Vendetta. But then it's interesting how sometimes directors just get that one film that kind of places them on the map. Sometimes after that, they build up. And then other times, they just kind of fall flat.
And the funny thing, I think, was it was his first film directing. Yeah. He hadn't done anything previously. No. He started off at the top.
I mean, how could you start with V for Vendetta
and then go downhill?
Spiraling down.
Retire. Do it and retire.
Spiral downhill after that. It's insane to me how that can happen. But yeah, I mean, he's someone, V for Vendetta is so, it's so well constructed. I think, when you look at the mise-en-scene, you look at the cinematography, you look at the way James McTeague actually constructed the film and structured the film and you know, those small details. I mean, having to direct someone like, please don't do this to me right now.
Hugo Weaving?
That's it. Thank you. Yeah. Having to direct someone like Hugo Weaving, who you don't see his face. Mm-hmm. So it's literally a miming performance. So being able to handle that and direct in a way where the whatever performance is coming out of Hugo Weaving is something that is engaging. Perfect. and you really connect with the character. Mm-mm. And you understand where the character is coming from. I mean, this is a film that's literally promoting rebellion. And vigilantism. Mm-hmm. is what it's doing. It's a revolution.
Yes.
You know, for me, it's like somebody like that, when you go from directing a film like this, it's so well crafted and the mise-en-scene and the vision and the color palette and all that stuff. And then you go and do things like The Invasion and Ninja Assassin, and it just gets worse and worse. And then now, recently directing Breaking In, I mean, really?
I have a question. Sense 8 is by the Wachowskis.
Yeah.
So he's directed 5 episodes of that. And I feel...
Oh, interesting.
I feel that he seems to be at his best when he's working with
them.
When he's
working with them, yeah. But again, you see, in television, directors don't really get that much limelight.
Credit, yeah.
You know what I mean? Now I'm curious, because I don't remember reading his name. I'm curious to see if they actually have the titles of the episodes he's directed, because I would be interested to see if they were probably... some of my favorite episodes. He was actually a second unit director on The Matrix as well.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
See? So I mean, it's interesting how some directors just do better when they're surrounded by the right people.
I think we talked about this last week. When you have a combination of like a director and an actor or people working together, mm-hmm. that whole system, mm-hmm. and that brings out the best in people. I mean, I think if he wants to rise from the ashes,
yep.
I
don't do know something why I with for, the Wachowskis
yeah,
again.
Yeah, do because they've kind of also gone under the radar, like slightly. They haven't had any huge, massive
aside from hits. Sense8. Yeah,
so maybe a collaboration between the three would be very interesting.
That would be awesome.
I think that could kick off, like, rejuvenate both their careers.
Yeah, I think that would be on point. That would be so on point if that were to happen.
Yeah.
Again, it's very interesting because it's just the right people. You know, when you're surrounded with the right people, Exactly. You know, this show.
Yeah.
I mean, this show was slightly going downhill for me, and then I brought in the right person.
Aww.
So here's what's happening. We just heard this track, the Home Alone theme. And you know, for all you out there streaming, when you're listening to us on Anghami, you don't get to hear the music that we hear all the time on the show. So but everybody that's here listening to us live, you just heard the theme with us. And I think it's been such a long time since I've actually just listened to the music of this film. And at one point I'm looking over to Hadi. Hadi's like, I'm about to cry.
Yeah.
It's such a beautiful, beautiful a piece of music.
Absolutely.
It's so heartfelt, so heartwarming. You just get all the feels. And it's funny because I know we're going to go off on a little bit of tangent here, but it's okay.
Yeah.
It's the spotlight episode. It's Friday, so who cares? I was just having this discussion with my dad yesterday because yesterday I got home. Okay. I had a few beers in me, but I wasn't like completely, I wasn't drunk or anything, but my defenses were down. Let's just say that. So I walk in and it turns out he's been watching The Return of the King.
Okay.
Okay. So I walk in at literally the scene where Frodo is about to get on the boat.
Mm.
Okay. And maybe like a few scene, like maybe one scene before that, but it was leading to that point. So I put my stuff down and I sit down, and that moment comes where Gandalf turns around and says, Frodo. And then the hobbits look at Frodo and I just bawl. I am in tears. It is ridiculous. I'm literally like, it's not even like I'm tearing. No. This was a cry fest.
Yeah.
And I was looking and my dad was like, but what's going on? I'm like, I can't do it. The scene kills me every time. It's just the power. And that's kind of what I'm leading to the music of John Williams. But like, it's insane to me how sometimes, and I almost feel like this is why we did the Unforgettable Scenes segment on the show, on the Spotlight shows. But it's insane to me how sometimes one scene has that much power to break down, break through your defenses. I wasn't even there for the beginning of the film. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like I've been watching The Return of the King or anything. I walked in literally at the end and could not but fall apart. The moment Frodo has to say goodbye to Sam, I'm donezo. I'm dead. It's RIP. I'm like, I'm falling back. Yeah. I've got my hands in the tomb. I'm dead. It kills me. And, you know, when you said, I'm about to cry because of the music, it just reminded me of that sometimes this is the power of cinema. This is why we love what we do. This is why we love movies so much, is because when you're watching a film, whether it be the music, the story, the acting, whatever it is, whatever element it is, you're living through an experience, an emotional experience that you cannot experience anywhere else in the world doing anything else. You can't do that with when you go to a concert. It's not the same. It's not the same when you're looking at an art piece. It's not the same when you're in the theater. It's not the same. Something about movies is just, nah.
Yeah. I just want to say something else. I know we're going off topic a bit, but it's okay.
It's fine.
Take a couple of minutes.
It's okay.
I want to talk about the power of music in films.
Yeah.
Because I think people don't appreciate and notice. They listen to soundtracks, to the people singing songs.
Mm-hmm.
But the music itself done by the composers, I think, by regular moviegoers, is so underappreciated.
Absolutely.
So if you're out there, I'm going to ask you for a favor. Go online, go on Anghami, go anywhere and try to find a soundtrack of a movie.
Of your favorite film.
You like, and the music resonates somewhere in your head. And just go listen to that music and see how much effort and how hard it was to get to that, to build. When composers get to start working on the music of the film is shot, is done, and they have these visuals on a screen, and they have to build the puzzle. They have to make it all work. And people don't realize the effort and how hard it is and how underappreciated these people are. Me and you love Williams and so many other composers.
Williams, Howard Shore, James Horner, Michael Giacchino.
The Shape of Water, what's his name?
Oh, Alexandre Desplat.
Yeah. So, and I'm sure we're going to do an episode talking about composers.
Yeah, well, definitely.
And we've had some episodes, the score, script,
yeah,
to
script
score.
To score, which is our new spinoff, yeah. Which we're focusing mostly on this. And this is why we, you know, we could be playing any music in the world. We could be playing any popular song on our radio show. But we made it an effort to decide that. And this was way back when the show originated in the very beginning. I always wanted to simply play music from films, whether it be a soundtrack or a score.
Yeah.
I wanted to focus on the music of cinema, the music of movies, because again, on the first off, it's the only, in parentheses, we're going to, or in quotations, it's the only popular music that is out there. I mean, if it weren't for Hollywood right now, or movies in general, orchestral music would be null and void.
Yeah, yeah.
Because nobody is going back. I mean, some people are.
But very few.
You know? But nobody goes and listens to, like, Mozart or Tchaikovsky or Beethoven or you know, other composers, Chopin, Chopin. You know, like nobody's listening to them anymore. What you are listening to, if you want to listen to orchestral music, is you're either listening to game scores, video game scores, which are also becoming very epic, or you're listening to TV show or cinema scores.
Yeah.
And cinema scores and video games, because TV shows don't normally go into the orchestral that much. It's mostly, it's done digitally because of time. Whereas video games and cinema, there's a lot of time and effort put into the orchestral sound of whether it be the game or the film. And it is underappreciated, and I absolutely agree with it. There's an exercise that I do in my art of film class. Whenever we hit on the sound element in my art of film class, I always play a random track. I don't tell the students where it's from, what film it's from. I just play a random track, and I have them close their eyes and then write down whatever they feel, whatever they see. It could be colors, it could be scenes, it could be emotions. Just write down everything. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, the majority of them are coming very close to what the actual scene was. And I'm like, this is the power of music. If it wasn't for the composer building for the melancholy or the contentment or the adventure or the whatever, if it wasn't for that, for these audio cues, you would not have a full cinematic experience.
Oh, definitely.
And then to prove that, what I do is I end up playing a scene on screen and I turn off the audio and I'm like, enjoy this.
Mm-hmm.
And then I turn on the audio and you hear, whether it be the thunder and the battle and the whatever, and then I turn it off again. I'm like, you notice sound and how important sound is to cinema.
If you think about it, the early movies had music. There was no speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was through music, and you had those black things on the screen with the sentences. He says this.
Yeah, the title cards.
Title cards. And it was music.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's lived on and evolved. And the power of music. Appreciate it, guys. Listen to soundtracks.
And even now, Rian Johnson, and I think I told you this, Rian Johnson for The Last Jedi, on The Last Jedi Blu-ray, has a version of the film.
Just music.
Without anything except for the music. It's literally the silent version of The Last Jedi with Williams' score.
Wow.
Which, the moment I buy that Blu-ray, that is the first thing I want to watch, because it could be a very interesting experience,
yeah,
I think.
Definitely.
Tangent done?
Yeah. That was a good, not rant.
Yeah, it wasn't a rant, but it was a complete sidetrack over what we wanted to discuss.
Speaking of Star Wars and special effects,
our second spotlight is actually entitled, Are We Over CGI Yet? And this comes to us inspired due to the fact that, you know, this summer we saw probably one of the best action films since Mad Max Fury Road. which was Mission Impossible Fallout. And the reason why it was so good was because it was so real.
Yeah.
Like nothing about it, even if they did have, and I'm sure they had some CGI moments, they were not oversaturated in the film. It wasn't an over, the use of CGI was very limited. And as much as I love Infinity War, the other day I was watching it with my dad and I looked at it and I'm like, oh my goodness, is there a lot of CGI? Mm-hmm. And then I saw some of the making of, which I want to show, I want to give you that because the making of is insane. They said the film has 3,000 shots in it. The whole film has 3,000 shots in it. And 2,100 of those shots
are CGI.
Are CGI. So when you think of the number, that means there's 900 shots that are practical.
Well, they're all the scenes with Thanos.
And everything else is CGI.
And Vision.
It's just like, okay.
And Rocket and Groot.
So why did it take you guys so long to actually shoot the film?
But I think like with Infinity War, the CGI was done properly.
I mean, yeah, you have to consider, yes, sure.
Some movies have better CGI than others.
Oh, absolutely.
But as you were saying, Fallout was done because of the actual effects, the actual human stunts and the human filming and everything. And it was such a powerful movie. And we've talked about the conversion, the mix of CGI and practical effects,
yeah,
which
the marriage.
I think
is
good. And the most recent example was Jurassic World.
I mean, Jurassic World, but you've also got the Star Wars films have gone back to using a lot of animatronics and prosthetics.
Definitely. But I'm talking about like since we started the show.
So
that would be the most recent one. But definitely Star Wars has taken a step in the right direction.
Instead of over-infusing CGI Lucas did
in
the prequels.
The 1, 2, 3, it was too much.
Yeah.
I think DC uses a lot of CGI and it does backfire in some places.
Mm-hmm. It's not as good.
It's not as good because you get distracted, I think, watching a scene and you're like, that looks really fake or that doesn't look real. And your focus, which should be on the story or on that specific scene or on the dialogue, just goes on the CGI of the whole thing.
Right.
But then again, it's done a lot.
It's
helped a lot.
Yeah. And I almost feel like Peter Jackson did the same thing that Lucas did. Like he did the Lord of the Rings and then he went to do the prequels of the Lord of the Rings, which are infused with the Hobbit trilogy looks like a freaking cartoon.
It looks like a kid's thing.
Yeah. It does not measure up.
No.
Anywhere near the power of the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
And instead of doing prosthetic orcs, he did CGI orcs. And it was just, it's just sad that he opted to do that versus what he did in the Lord of the Rings. And I don't know if it was because they had a lower budget, because again, CGI does tend to make things a lot cheaper.
A lot easier.
And a lot faster and easier. It's like, we'll just, add this in post, but again, it cheapens it, I think. I was extremely disappointed with The Hobbit, for example.
Yeah.
Because I was like, this doesn't, nothing about this seems as grounded in a reality as the Lord of the Rings was when we first were introduced to Middle Earth in the Fellowship of the Ring. Although there is a lot of CGI in Lord of the Rings, but it's grounded. I don't know what it is. It's just more grounded.
They've chosen where to use the CGI and where to use actual people and how to combine it for the story to be better. There's a movie I remember, Gladiator has some CGI, the whole arena.
Yeah.
There's actually one quarter of the arena with actual people and the rest is CGI'd. And it's done in a very subtle way, very nice way.
Yeah.
You're not focusing on the arena, you're actually focusing on the story.
Yeah, but then you look at something like The Gladiator and then you go and watch Charlton Heston's Ben-Hur and you're just like, well, they did it without CGI. Yeah. Why did you need CGI?
But it doesn't harm. To me, visually, it doesn't harm.
Yeah, I mean, it's a crowd. It's not going to harm.
Yeah.
It's not going to harm.
The aesthetic of the whole thing is fine with me. It doesn't bother me.
Yeah,
it really does. But with something where there's like too many.
Right. So for me to just to kind of like
wrap it up,
wrap this this topic up because we shared it with talking about music. For me, I don't mind the CGI as long as it's being used to tell the story and not to replace the story,
okay.
If that makes sense.
That yeah.
Because Ready Player One, for example, is all
CGI,
but it works,
yeah.
And it's gorgeous to look at. Avatar, same thing. It's all CGI, but it feels grounded. It feels authentic. It does not feel fake.
Yeah.
Like, you believe everything that you are watching.
Yes.
You believe everything you are watching in Ready Player One. So as long as it's being used as a companion to the story, to help the story, and not vice versa, I think I'm okay with
it. We're safe, yeah. Cameron does really good job with CGI, by the way.
Just that's because although people hate James Cameron a lot,
no, but look at Terminator 2. How well it's
goodness.
Aged.
That was revolutionary at the time.
You still watch it and it still looks good.
Yeah, which reminds me again, I need to give you the James Cameron story of science fiction because that documentary series is great.
Are you ready for this?
Ooh. I swear we should have like a jingle
music.
For this.
No,
like,
you should put like a Ennio Morricone Western kind of. Like,
yep. So this is the second chance segment of Script to Screen, where either Had or I will pick a film and we will try to convince each other as to why this film should be given a second chance. So this is done in the hopes of changing the toxic conversation surrounding movies. We want to convince the other party why this film is worth loving. And so we've picked a film. We're starting off a little soft because I don't necessarily dislike this film.
Yeah.
I just don't believe that it is as epic as everybody else says it is, especially since I saw it more than once. And the more I've seen it, the more it's slightly let me down versus Had, who saw it more than once and loves it even more.
Yeah.
So we're starting off with this one. I think the next Second Chance episode will be a little bit more aggressive. But so here we go. I think the way this will go, since you're the one that's trying to convince me, you've got the floor, go for it, and I'll rebuttal afterwards.
All right.
Let's try to make this as concise and as the point as possible.
Let's try. So today we're talking about Black Panther. A movie I really enjoyed big time. And the first time I watched it in the movie theater, I loved it. And I watched it again actually a few days ago in preparation for this. And I must say I loved it even more. I'm going to try to break it down a bit.
Okay.
Bit by bit. So let's start with the soundtrack we just listened to. Musically, the film is very relevant to the topic and the whole universe and of Wakanda, the whole world, excuse me, of Wakanda.
Mm-hmm.
The creation of Wakanda itself makes it feel like a very realistic kind of country. It could exist. There could be a Wakanda.
Sure.
And I love the marriage in Wakanda of the very traditional African kind of feel to it, plus the technological advances that they have in Wakanda because of the vibranium and whatnot. So that was a very interesting combination.
Mm-hmm.
So visually, this leads to something very visual, where the movie is very beautiful to look at.
Okay.
Very nice colors. And they all fall under an African kind of...
Yes.
That cultural thing.
Yeah. I do agree, not to cut you off, but I do agree there is a definite unification of all the elements together.
Sure. So you want to look at costumes, you want to look at makeup, you also feel that in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's look at performances. I think performances were top notch. They were very good performances. Michael B. Jordan had given us one of the best villains since Loki, in my opinion, because this came out pre-Infinity War.
Mm-hmm.
He had motive. Like him or hate him, I think you can understand his motives. You might, some people might even root for him to an extent about what he's doing. So the message is very relevant to what's happening today. Chadwick Boseman as
T'Challa,
Black Panther, was magnificent. A very royal performance, very humble. You see that this is a man who's recently been given the keys to the kingdom, if I can say that, and is, you know, seeing what to do. Should Wakanda be exposed and should the world be allowed to enter Wakanda, or should it still be within its small, you know, people thinking that it's a poor country and underdeveloped country and whatnot? The action sequences were really good. I love the fight scenes. I loved, on a personal level, I love Andy Serkis, and I really enjoyed his performance as Ulysses Claus.
Short-lived, yeah. Though, yeah, in true, my opinion.
True, he could have, but again, watching it again, his death serves purpose to the story. It makes sense for people to like Killmonger, to unite with him, to see what T'Challa couldn't do.
Sure.
And I love the paternal, the family story, the paternal story and the relationship between Shuri and T'Challa, the mother. It was a fun movie. It was a good movie. It made me think. It made me want to go to Wakanda. It made me dream a bit. I really had a very pleasant time watching the film. I'm very curious to see how the character is going to develop in future films.
Because
That's always interesting. It wasn't 100% an origin story because he had popped up in Civil War. So the way they continued was, for me, very smart.
Yeah.
And the direction was spot on. I loved the movie.
Yeah. So, it's very clear.
So
it's very clear. Okay, so here are my really quickly because we're playing against the clock now. Here are my issues with the film. Again, nothing that you mentioned I disagree with. I think visually the film is very beautiful. I think the performances are good. I don't think they're stellar performances. I think they're good performances. Where I think the film lacked a little bit is in its length. I think the film is a little too long. Narratively speaking, it goes through a lull at some point, and it could have been a little bit more, urgent, maybe. And it wasn't. There wasn't a sense of urgency in the storyline as much as I would have hoped that there would be. And this is, I'm talking to you from a second and third viewing kind of standpoint. Yeah. Not all the fight sequences were really good for me. Mm-hmm. I love the car chase sequence. I love the fight sequence in the casino. Mm-hmm. I do not like the final sequence between T'Challa and Killmonger. Mm-hmm. It is cartoony. The CGI is very evident there. Mm-hmm. And it drew me out of the film on a second viewing. You know, the subliminal messages of man versus woman also are slightly annoying in this case. It's not a coincidence that all of the army, all of T'Challa's army is all women, and then all of the Djibouti and whatever are all men. It couldn't have been intermixed or whatever. You know, for me, those are minor things that, again, it's not that I don't like the film, and it's not that I'm not curious as to where it's going to lead. I really hope opening up of Wakanda is going to lead to consequences. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it has in Infinity War, mm-hmm. which is you know, and I think his second in command, or whatever her name is, I forgot her name.
She's
the general. Yeah. She's the general. She says it in Infinity War. When we decided that we were going to open up the walls of Wakanda, this is not what I had in mind. Mm-hmm. And it's because they are now in danger. They're now, you know, there's a danger, which I like, because mm-hmm. I was hoping that it wasn't going to be this idealistic, opening Wakanda, nothing's going to happen, blah, 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 mm-hmm. blah, you know. So I am curious to see where the second film leads. But again, those minor things, the length of the film, narratively, I think it could have been a lot stronger if it was a little bit more compact. Those things bother me a little bit mm-hmm. and reduced it for me, but not to the point where, again, I do not hate the film. I just don't think it is as hype-tastic as everybody continues to say that it is. I think what it's done musically, visually, is a great step. It's nice to have this cultural diversity in Marvel. So I'll give it a third chance.
Okay. Okay, why not? By the way, I think I could be mistaken. I have to double check this, and the internet connection isn't very good. But I think in the comics, his guards are women.
Yeah. That is very. That's yeah, part, yeah.
So they have
yeah,
to yeah. also be
sure.
faithful to.
Sure.
Sounded like cool, but sure.
But again, the subliminal messages are there in the comics as well. Marvel has been known to be pushing these kind of ideologies from the get-go. I mean, look at, you know, what's under Marvel. You've got the X-Men, you've got, you know, there's a lot of ideologies that are being spread in the comics. So, again, it's not that I don't like the film. I just don't think it's worthy of the hype that surrounded it.
Okay. To me, it works because if you look at the whole picture, the whole 360 thing.
Sure. Yeah. It could be. And you know what? Maybe the sequel will make me appreciate the first film even
absolutely.
More.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know? But again, this is kind of the point of the second chance. Mm-hmm. So I think this was a good kickoff for the second chance. For me, it's not that it doesn't work. It's just there are things that irk me in the film, and that's about it. But I will try to give it a second chance, maybe, or a third chance right before the release of
the
sequel.
Panther, yeah.
So that way I'll kind of, because it's a gap between this one and the next,
probably,
I think.
And we have to see what's going to happen.
With part four, of Infinity, Avengers 4.
Yeah.
There it is.
Maybe entitled Endgame. I don't know. Who knows?
I hope not.
I read that.
Cheesy
like
title.
Places. But it is.
I would love for it to just be called The New Avengers.
The New Avengers. But then it would point out to certain things which are evident.
Well, I mean, everybody knows them anyway. I mean, nobody's really doubting that Tony Stark and Chris and Steve Rogers are going to...
You know, I don't know why yesterday I was thinking about it. I have... a percentage of doubt that they might
stick around.
One of them might. They might surprise us with one
Captain,
of them.
Captain.
I hope so. But they might because they're known. Marvel to like make you think something, and then kaboom, it's a different. A lot of people thought the characters would die.
In this movie, they didn't.
So I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see. And on that kaboom, we've reached the end of our show. So if you want to follow us on social media, you can do so at Alan Mahana and at...
Hat Solo.
You messed that up. thank you for joining us on a Friday. You can catch us tomorrow at 3 p.m. for a brand new episode of the Script to Screen News Hour, which is our more newsworthy kind of episode. I'm totally loving this new format. I love being on the air twice a week. It's great. It gives us more time to talk about the things we want to talk about. And it keeps us on our toes.
No, definitely. It's fun. I like how this is going. And again, because I said this before, go listen to soundtracks, people.
Yeah, listen to soundtracks. And if you want, soundtracks, but you don't know which ones to listen to, you can check out our recommendations on our Facebook page, on our Instagram, and on our website, www.scripttoscreenpod.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also, the website's full of other information that would be helpful for you guys as well. We might have some merch soon. There's a lot of plans in the works.
Yeah.
A lot of plans in the works. We're loving Season 5 so far. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you. You'll hear us tomorrow. We won't see you. We'll see you eventually, maybe.
You can see us on the streets.
Us on the streets and be like, hey, you're the Script to Screen guys. And we'll be like, hey, you're right.
Yeah, that's us.
Thank you guys for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Hi, I'm Alan.
And I am Hat Solo.
And together we can rule the galaxy.
That might take too much time. Let's talk about films and TV instead.
That makes sense. Join us at 3 p.m. every Friday for Script to Screen Spotlight and Saturday for the Script to Screen News Hour.
We'll be discussing all the latest news from the film and TV industry.
And we'll also enchant you with some of the greatest songs and soundtracks out there. Script to Screen, only on Radio Lebanon 96.2 FM, made to be heard.